The Orb, Volume 2, Number 3. Privilege. Hello, welcome to The Orb. My name is Reed Hart. As this is an audio podcast, I'll let you know what most of you have guessed. I'm a white, male, of the middle class, born in Canada, a country of considerable wealth and liberty, with peace, order, and good government. Well, 2 out of 3 isn't bad. These things grant me privileges that many others don't have. I'm becoming increasingly aware of them as I get called out from time to time. Getting called out is okay. I'm learning that it is not about me, it is about what I don't yet know. Getting called out is about learning that privilege is what you don't notice. A privilege started out as a private law, a privilegium. It was a rule relating to a specific person or institution. Now we take it to mean special powers or immunities held as a consequence of power. In most cases, that power derives from history. Privilege is still present in the granting of permission to some individuals to practice their skills as doctors, lawyers, or even teachers. We don't consider these as privilege, but in law, that is what they are. We consider privilege something different, something associated with skin, or sex, or creed, or money. There is an excellent video for the Project for Awesome 2011 in which the creator notes the passage of a child in a school in Los Angeles through his career in physics to his Nobel Prize, a path that started with the privilege of sitting at a desk. The video very effectively draws our attention to the Kind Fund, Kids in Need of Desks. It's a charity to put desks in schools in Malawi. The point here is that simply having a desk in school is a privilege. It's something you don't notice you have.
The paved paradise, devoid of a fucking lot, with a sleek hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? Paved paradise, devoid of a fucking lot. They took all the trees and put them in a tree museum. And then they charged all the people $25 just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? Paved paradise and put up a fucking lie. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away your DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, but leave me the birds and the bees. Please, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? Pave paradise and put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi carried off my old man. Don't it always seem to go? Don't know what you got till it's gone. Pave paradise, foot of a fucking lot. Pave paradise, foot of a fucking lot. Pave paradise, foot of a fucking lot.
It is worth noting that the French Revolution set as one of its objectives the abolition of privilege. France had estates. The first was the church. The second was nobility, and the third was where everyone else ended up. there were separate laws for each estate. Privilege was abolished officially by the National Constituent Assembly on August 4th of 1789. Good for them. Didn't seem to stick, though. Privilege is going to be with people no matter what. Attempts to remove it can strike us as absurd. Consider the relatively well-known short story Harrison Bergeron by Kurt Vonnegut Jr. Set in a future where the U.S. Constitution has been amended such that people are allocated handicaps to level the field, no one is allowed to be too smart, beautiful, graceful, and so on. They wear weights to impair their movements, or earplugs that play loud sounds to disrupt their thoughts. Everyone is reduced to a common capacity for achievement, and it isn't very high. Of course, there is still the handicapper general. There has to be someone to hand out the handicaps, someone to determine who is blessed and by how much. Consider the brave new world of Aldous Huxley. They breed people into their stations. There are the alphas the story centers on, but also the epsilons and gammas that do the grunt work. Privilege is entrenched in this society through its very design. During gestation, you might get this hormone at this point, or are irradiated for a few minutes at that point. All this is to create the differences that people inherently use to grant or deny privilege. Whether it is the smart exercising power over the simple, men dominating women, a Shiite group dominating the Sunnis, or whites dominating just about anybody else, it is something that one group has and others do not. It becomes part of who we are. We build it into our language. Tim Wise, speaking on the pathology of white privilege.
We like to talk about those who are down as if there is no up. Right? We like to use language that obscures the interrelationship of down and up. Now, down has no meaning without an up. It is a relative term. But we talk about those at the bottom of the hierarchy, not paying attention to the fact that for anyone who's down, someone is above them, and they're above them because they're down. I just want to help the underprivileged. That's the word we use. I've used it before. I don't use it anymore, except in a speech like this. We just want to help the underprivileged. But what's wrong with that word, folks? At least two things that ought to be pretty obvious to you, right? Number one is it's a passively constructed term, right? It's the passive voice, as my English teacher would say. Underprivileged doesn't imply that anybody did anything to anyone. It's just there's privilege and I will be damned. There you are under it. We could just figure out how you got down there. We could solve all the problems of the Western world. But we don't want to know how you got down there. No, that's why we came up with that bumper sticker. Stuff happens. That's the G-rated version. That's a bumper sticker that only a straight white upper middle class male could have made. Because anyone who isn't straight, anyone who isn't male, anyone who isn't white, anyone who isn't upper middle class knows that stuff doesn't just happen. Stuff gets done by people to people. Nothing is a coincidence. Nothing is random. It isn't osmosis. The second problem with the term underprivileged is even bigger than the first one, is it's a relative term. If we use the word underprivileged, then by definition there must be an overprivileged, but we don't use that word in polite conversation. Indeed, it doesn't exist in any dictionary to be found on the planet. But if there's an underprivileged, there must be an overprivileged. Why don't we talk about it? Because that would require that we acknowledge that if there are 2 to 3 million people being targeted for race-based housing discrimination because they are people of color every year, that is 2 to 3 million more places I can live.
Privilege grants a competitive advantage. It also grants dispensation for the competitive. Increasing numbers of studies reveal that jocks cheat more often than non-jocks. It's part of their conditioning. The celebrated athlete can do no wrong. Drugs, parties, rapes, no matter. Surely that woman is lying. Who wouldn't want to have sex with the star quarterback? We'll just shut a few people up and cheer them on at Sunday's game. The celebrity can do little wrong. If it's public enough, we slap them down a little to show the law is evenly applied. Lindsay Lohan did some time, sort of. Okay, it was just a few hours, but that wasn't her fault. Prison overcrowding cannot be pinned on her. It's fair. No privilege here. move along now. We have a tendency to want to see people brought down. Crab mentality is a way of thinking that says, if I can't have it, neither can you. The metaphor refers to a pot of crabs. Individually, the crabs could easily escape, but they grab at each other in such a way that none can. They all get cooked together. Associated with similar short-term thinking, people try to pull down any member who achieves success beyond some perceived limit. It is also often used colloquially in reference to individuals or communities attempting to escape a so-called underprivileged life, but kept from doing so by others attempting to ride on their coattails or those who simply resent their success. This is similar to the tall poppy syndrome, in which people of genuine merit are resented, attacked, or cut down because their talents or achievements elevate them above or distinguish them from their peers. Today, we're more likely to award these individuals with something like the Order of Canada. It is better to acknowledge you're one of us since we can't lop your head off. In the USA, Benjamin Franklin Fairless, president of the United States Steel Corporation in 1950, criticized such behavior when he stated, "You cannot strengthen one by weakening another, and you cannot add to the stature of a dwarf by cutting off the leg of a giant. But we try to."
19 men who happen to be Arab and Muslim who fly planes into buildings, and we have otherwise rational human beings running around insisting that we should stop and search everyone like them at the airport. We did not do this or anything even remotely like it when Tim McVeigh and Terry Nichols brought down the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City, nor would we have. We didn't do it when the Unabomber, crazy-ass white man in the woods of Montana, blowing people up for 20 years before they caught him. It didn't stick to the rest of us who were white men. The Olympic Park bomber, Eric Rudolph, puts a bomb in Olympic Village in Atlanta in 96, blows up a gay bar, blows up a family planning clinic. He too then runs off to the woods. As a side note, I have no idea what it is about white people and the woods. So it doesn't stick to us. There have been over 125 family planning centers, some of which provide abortion services, many of which do not, that have been bombed or burned in the last 20 years. And every single one of them, according to the FBI, have been white. They've mostly been men. They claim to be Christian. Different lecture for a different night. 125 or more. 125 plus McVeigh and Nichols is 127. Unabomber's 128. Eric Rudolph is 129. 129 confirmed terrorists who are white in this country in the last 20 years. It sticks to nobody who's white. 19 Arab Muslims, and it sticks to everyone who is either. 700 million Arab folk on the planet, 1.5 billion Muslims on the planet. To assume that we know something about them based on the acts of 19 is to commit what any statistician will tell you is sampling error. It is mathematical illiteracy. And yet we do it because we can.
Racial privilege is something that colors our political actions. There certainly are politicians that argue that we should not see color or creed. We should treat everyone the same. We get laws that say so. We get charter rights and desegregation bills. But we all know that where the rubber hits the road, where the cop on the street meets the kid with a hoodie, it's a different story. Recall the Papers, Please law in Arizona? It's not the only one. One in Alabama took a curious turn in November of 2011. The state passed the law in June of that year, which calls for police to verify someone's immigration status if officers have a reasonable suspicion he or she could be in the United States illegally. The state had also been working closely with Mercedes-Benz to bring a factory into the state. Then, a German director of the company gets pulled over by Tuscaloosa police, asked for ID, and arrested because he could only present his German identity card. The governor got involved. The executive's associates later produced his passport, visa, and a driver's license to secure his release. Ah, but there's more. The next month, a Japanese employee of Honda was stopped and arrested. Although he showed an international driver's license, a valid passport, and a U.S. work permit, It turns out the law also requires all drivers to carry a valid driver's license, either from a U.S. state or from their native country, if they're from abroad. A judge dismissed the immigration charges 3 days after his booking. If you'd like to follow along with a transcript, or check the notes and references from the Orb, consider joining in at orbcast.ca. It offers premium content for every podcast and full access to the back catalog. Join in and post to the forum. Please visit orbcast.ca and check us out.
To be a person of color in this country is to always have to know what the other guy thinks. It is to always have to know what other people think about you, because if you don't, if you for 1 minute forget what other people might think about you, your life is in danger. But to be the dominant group is to have that luxury, or to think you do. To think you do. Of not having to care what other people think, because you're the big dog. You're the top. You're the king of the hill. You don't have to worry about what other people think. That's privilege. You don't have to know. You can sort of laugh it off. At least we thought we could. We could have that attitude that says, well, you know, what are you going to do to us? We're big and bad. We spend $400 billion a year on defense, fool. If you come for us, we will bomb you back to the Stone Age. And if you're already there, we'll take you back to whatever the hell came before the Stone Age. Because we can.
Tim Wise spoke of an email exchange he had at the start of the war in Iraq.
Invasion doesn't bring liberation, and black and brown folk know it. They've been there. They've done that. But the privilege had this luxury, and I remember 3 days into the war, getting an email from a guy who was angry at me for having written some anti-war essays, and 72 hours in, he's writing me an email, and he's saying, See, and this is what he said. He said, see, you dirty, stinky, no bath taking, Birkenstock wearing, hippie, anarchist, communist, you were wrong. I said, really? How do you know that we were wrong? Well, because it's going, look, we're winning. They love us. I said, really? How do you know that they love us? And he said, well, I opened the paper today and there was this great AP photograph right there on the front page of a little Iraqi kid giving the thumbs up to the soldiers, our soldiers. See? So they love us. They are greeting us like liberators. You all were wrong. I said, okay, and I'll tell you, or I'll ask you, what I asked him, again, a cultural competence quiz. What do you think this means in Iraq? Do you know what this means throughout the so-called Middle East and much of North Africa, Egypt up? It does not mean, keep up the good work. I love what you do. This instead is the functional equivalent of flipping you off. So this five-year-old child is punking our entire nation. But we don't know it because we don't have to know it, but maybe we should have known it.
These kinds of cultural competence questions are much more than just getting flipped off without knowing it. Our privilege costs their lives. At roadblocks, the Americans would hold up their hand, palm forward, to signal to approaching Iraqis to stop. Everyone knows that signal, except the locals. For them, it is a signal of greeting, that you want them to come over and have a conversation. They continue to approach, they get shot. It's not our fault they're ignorant of our cultural norms. It's not our fault they approach when they should stop. It's not our fault they died. Privilege is serious business.
I was born to ignorance, yes, and lesser poverties. I was born to privilege that I did not see, like a pigment in my skin, one free and easy. And I didn't know it, but my way was paved. I grew up a Catholic boy in a northeastern state, placed when asked where you from. Some people tend to hesitate, reply a little bit late, as if maybe it didn't rain. I was born to ignorance and privilege. dad ran a printing press, a tag and label factory. May have seen it as a child, now a distant memory, almost too faint to see. Dark red brick factory, didn't know it, but my way was paved. We moved from a city street shortly after I arrived to a house on a gravel road where I learned to be alive. Crawl, walk, run, and ride, that's where I learned to come alive. I was born to ignorance and privilege. If the wind is at your back and you never turn around, you may never know the wind is there. You may never hear the sound. Whoa. Got to grow and go to school, work at home and dream at night, even be a college fool like I had any right. Never went through a war, never Great Depression poor. Didn't know it, but my way was paved. Nose to the grindstone, shoulder to the wheel, back against the wall, maybe you know how it feels. Your back and you never turn around, you may never know the wind is there, you may never hear the sound. Whoa. I was born to ignorance, yes, and lesser poverties. I was born to privilege that I did not see, like a pigment in my skin, one of free and easy. Didn't know it, but my way was paved. Cause I was born to ignorance and privilege.
Wallace Shawn wrote, "Our capacity to fantasize about other people and to believe our own fantasies makes it possible for us to enjoy theater. But unfortunately, it's a capacity which has brought incalculable harm and suffering to human beings. One can hardly begin to describe the anguish caused by our habit of using our fantasizing capacity to ascribe negative characteristics to people who, for one reason or another, we'd like to think less of. Sometimes we do this in regard to large groups of people, none of whom we've met. But we can even apply our remarkable capacity in relation to individuals or groups whom we know rather well, sometimes simply to make ourselves feel better about things we happen to have done to them or are planning to do. You couldn't exactly say, for example, that Thomas Jefferson had no familiarity with dark-skinned people. His problem was that he couldn't figure out how to live the life he in fact was living unless he owned these people as slaves. And as it would have been unbearable to him to see himself as so heartless, unjust, and cruel as to keep in bondage people who were just like himself, he ignored the evidence that was in front of his eyes and clung to the fantasy that people from Africa were not his equals. Well, one could write an entire political history of the human race by simply recounting the exhausting cycle of fantasies which different groups have believed at different times about different other groups. Of course, these fantasies were absurd in every case. After a while, one does grasp the pattern. After a certain period of time, somebody says, "Well, actually, they're not that different from anybody else. They have the same capacities. I don't like all of them. Some of them are geniuses," etc. The revelations are always in the same direction. We learn about one group or another that people are more than they seem to be. Give them some room. The Orb is a listener-supported presentation of Cornoble Productions. New podcasts are released alternate Mondays at orbcast.ca or pick us up at iTunes. I'm Reed Hart.